And we continue at 106 Talk Radio 790 KABC, the John Phillips Show, broadcasting live from my living room in Palm Springs, California. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, we begin this hour with breaking news. Tony, so inspired by London Breed's love of them, is doing two nights in Honolulu next year.
They are. Now, what kind of venue is Tony playing?
They're going to be at the Blue Note Theater in Honolulu, Hawaii. They'll also be at the Aftermath venue in Columbus on October 9th. London Breed better be showing up for that one.
You watch. They're going to go on tour like they're Pat Robertson now that they're getting all this publicity.
It's been almost 20 years since anybody has said Tony three times in a row. And we have nobody to thank for that except for London Breed.
800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. While the recall of Warden Newsom is over, there are still other recalls here in Southern California that are in the works. On Friday, we spoke with Deputy Los Angeles County District Attorney John Hatami, who was part of the movement to recall the horrendous district attorney in Los Angeles County, George Gascon. It appears as if that movement will not get the required number of signatures to put that recall on the ballot. However, they say they're licking their wounds and regrouping and intend on coming back with a new effort to recall George Gascon from office. Joining us to talk about all of this is former Los Angeles City Councilman and LAPD Sergeant Dennis Zine. Councilman Zine, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Well, I wish we had something better to talk about, but it looks like Gascon is going to survive to fight another day.
Well, it's a temporary situation where it was started with good intentions, didn't have all the mechanism in order and the funding, et cetera. So basically, we're going to scrap that attempt, coming up with a new environment, raising the dollars, getting it off the ground, having a kickoff where we have the facilities, the resources in order to get the signatures that are required by the County of Los Angeles. We've got cities that have approved. We've got law enforcement that's approved. So we're going to basically just regenerate with the proper resources in order to make this successful. And there's no doubt in my mind that once we qualify, get it on the ballot, that enough people in Los Angeles County are going to vote to recall George Gascon from office. But again, it was started with good intentions. It didn't have all the resources necessary. And I think that's what we're going to find, is we're going to get everything in order before we kick it off. So right now, it's been put to rest, but we're not walking away from it. We're just recouping, getting everything in place in a very professional manner so we can move forward with it.
I'm the last person in the world that you guys should be taking any advice from. However, this last time around, one of the pushes that seemed to be underway was trying to get these various city councils to take a vote of no confidence in Gascon, which is good, but those aren't signatures. You need paid signature gatherers to be out who are collecting these signatures out in front of the grocery stores, the Walmarts, the Targets. That's the way to get the signatures to put these things on the ballots. When it happens organically, it's great. But more times than not, if you're going to get something to qualify for the ballot, you're going to need to go to the professionals.
Absolutely. And you're talking about 500,000 signatures. So you're talking an effort to get people. And there's a lot of people who believe that we need to make the change, willing to go out there and get a few signatures from their family, from their neighbors. But you need large numbers. And that's where you have the paid gatherers that go into the area, into the communities throughout LA County, all the region. Again, you've got 88 cities. You've got a tremendous effort. You got 10 million people in LA County, but you need to have the resources. And that's what we really didn't have at the time. It was good intention. But before we come back and file the petition once again for this recall of District Attorney George Gascon, we're going to have that mechanism in order in place, then we can be successful with it. We're those people that actually, as a profession, go out there and do that, get those signatures validated, and get this on the ballot. So we're stepping back, but we're not abandoning. We're regrouping, doing it in a proper manner so we'll be able to be successful. And in essence, the voters of Los Angeles County will be successful, and they'll be happy, and they'll have a district attorney, hopefully, we can put in place that will be supporting the rules of common decency, law and order, which we don't have at this particular time with Gascon as a district attorney of L.A. County.
One of the reasons that I believe George Gascon was elected to office in the first place was because his election against Jackie Lacey was on the same ballot as the presidential election. The presidential election sucked up all the oxygen in the room. That was the only thing that anyone was paying attention to. So if your name was on the ballot in a down ballot race, no one paid one iota of attention to what you were doing or saying. And in a hyper-partisan environment, if the Democratic Party gets behind a candidate, that's probably enough to push them over the finish line. The Democratic Party got behind George Gascon over Jackie Lacey, including big-name Democrats like Adam Schiff and the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, Laura Friedman, and others, not to mention the left-wing activist base of the Democratic Party. And people just use that as shorthand as saying, okay, I guess that's the candidate we're supposed to vote for without knowing anything about the race. Fast forward to the recall. The recall of Gavin Newsom was sucking up all of the oxygen in the room. Everyone was paying attention to that. And I think that George Gascon, by laying low, was able to survive because he wasn't the one that people were focused on. It was Newsom.
That's correct. And you didn't see him really putting up any kind of argument or any kind of fight, just kind of sitting by the sidelines and watching it as it moved forward without much concern at all. So his strategy, his tactics seemed to work. And at the same time, the people of Los Angeles County are the ones that are suffering. Law enforcement is suffering because they really don't have the prosecution in place that needs to maintain order within the region. So you're absolutely right. There were a lot of circumstances that led to that. But unless you get people out there to get those signatures, and I had people come to my neighborhood to get signatures, but when you're getting them one at a time, you're talking about massive numbers. That's why you've got to go to the public events, the venues, the county fair, whatever the case may be, to get those validated signatures. Because when you get those signatures, they're not all validated, because you have to make sure you're a registered voter living in L.A. County. So it takes a tremendous effort, a lot of resource. And you're talking about 500,000 signatures that are validated. That's a key factor. So Gascon's strategy, he sat by the wayside, didn't do much except continue on his trend to take law enforcement and crumble it and evaporate it. But at the same time, we were scrambling because we didn't have all the resources we needed. But again, we're going to come back on the situation. I got into this after it began, but we need to have it properly administered, and that's exactly what we're doing right now. So we're not rushing to go down or try and make this massive rush at the last moment to say, okay, we're going to go out there and get these. We're going to start over fresh, new, with the proper environment, the proper resources, so we can be successful for Los Angeles County.
You know, L.A. County has swung hard to the left in recent years, including in the recall of Gavin Newsom, where 7 out of 10 voters voted to keep Newsom in office, a number that was much higher, I think, than many were anticipating. That being said, one of the most recent moves that Gascon made was not doing anything to keep Sirhan Sirhan, the killer of Bobby Kennedy, in prison. He was convicted, he was sentenced, and now that office is not lifting a finger to try to keep him in prison. You talk to a lot of old-timey liberals, a lot of people who came up through the 60s, and the one figure that many of them will reference when they talk about who got them interested in politics was Bobby Kennedy. In a Democratic county with a lot of Democratic voters who have been here for a long time, how do you think politically that move of allowing Sirhan Sirhan to be released from prison is going to play with Democrats who still love Bobby Kennedy?
Well, there's still hope that the governor will reject that. Hopefully the governor will reject it. That's a big question. But they're disappointed. And I think when you see the other family members of the Kennedy family that's coming out against this, but the district attorney has a policy, he doesn't send his representatives for hearings. He just backs off. And he's very specific in what he files and how he files and what he dismisses. So I think the people that are impacted, the folks who are in their later years of life saying, well, how did this happen? How did we have a person murder an individual who was a popular individual, part of that Kennedy environment? And how does it just happen where now we're going to let this man loose? I don't care how old he is. There's a price you pay when you murder someone. And there was no question that the murder took place by Sirhan. It was very obvious. I mean, we saw that. But the fact is, people throw their hands up and say, how does this happen? So Gascon, by his attitude, is, well, it's okay. I'm just going to let it go. Let him go back into society. But there's still some reviews that have to take place before it gets to the governor. So the governor hopefully will reject it. And if he doesn't, that reminds me what happened with Measure 9 and Measure 10, the Senate bills regarding housing. Soon he beat the recall. Boom. He signs that legislation. Well, people aren't aware yet what's going to happen with those two measures regarding housing in the state of California, where you're basically going to take the ordinances that are in place by the municipalities and throw them out the window and say your single-family residential areas are no longer going to be single-family residential areas because of the Senate bills 9 and 10 that the governor signed. As soon as that recall was over, boom, the impact is going to be felt. People aren't aware of it yet. They really haven't felt what's going to happen. But this is the way that our society seems to work. But it's not about liberal or conservative. It's about what is good for society. I'm a no party preference. I'm looking at it. What is good for the people in the community that have a family that want to enjoy life in a safe manner? You see what's happening on Melrose with the robberies, daytime robberies that are taking place. It's like, my God, the shoplifting is taking place. It's like everything's out of control. And then the people come up, well, let's defund the police. Well, who's going to handle the problem? I'm going to tell you a situation that happened last week. There was a call. Three individuals dressed down and went to a residential area near Mulholland Drive. A home invasion robbery was taking place. They called 911. 15 minutes for the first unit to arrive. 15 minutes. The individual who lives at the residence armed himself. That call went out. And I'm listening to this on the police scanner. I'm saying, where are the cops? You know, you can only do it so fast. Call for an air unit. There's no air unit. Where's the ground units? It's going to take time to get there. People were frightened. Fortunately, the crime did not take place. They were scared off. But this is the situation we've reverted to. So liberal or conservative, it doesn't matter. You're a potential victim, you and your family. You can just imagine the fear that this family went through. This is what's happening that people are not aware of. Open your eyes and look at what we're trying to do in this region. Make it safe for everyone. So you can go to a restaurant in Ventura Boulevard or Beverly Hills or wherever, and you're not going to have to worry about someone with a gun coming up to you and robbing you in the middle of broad daylight. It's like, where are we? And how is this happening in a city of the angels? And this is exactly when you look at the articles and you start talking to police officers, what is happening? So Gascon is reflective of this attitude. Well, it's okay. Let the bad guys, well, you know, we got a standard of conduct and rules. You follow the law. And if you don't follow the law, there's consequences. But there's no consequences. Let me go do what I want to do. I'll rob, I'll steal, I don't care. This is what we have to change. Again, liberal, conservative, it doesn't matter. No one wants to get their car stolen. No one wants to be a victim of crime. No one wants to get shot. But when you see what's happening in our society here in this region of Southern California, it's like, what is happening, folks? Wake up. It's happening because you're not doing what you need to do to support those people and those laws that protect you and your family. That's what the bottom line is. And hopefully people will wake up. I know you live in the desert. The desert's a whole different environment, much calmer. You don't have the massive population. But if you look at the attitude there versus the attitude here, you want to be safe. People want to be safe everywhere. So it crosses all political lines, liberal, conservative, everything in between.
You know, we just had the anniversary of 9/11. And when they went back and wrote the report of all of the failures on 9/11, one of the points that they made over and over and over again was that the various law enforcement agencies didn't really work together with one another. There were constant fights over jurisdiction. So you had the Port Authority Police, you had the NYPD, you had the FBI, you had all of these various agencies, and frequently they couldn't even do simple things like talk to one another on the frequencies on the walkie-talkies because they were on different frequencies. So they couldn't even talk to, the NYPD couldn't talk to the Port Authority Police and vice versa, that sort of thing. Right. In Los Angeles, one of the things that has to happen to protect public safety is the police department, not just the LAPD, but the sheriffs and the various independent agencies, have to be able to work with the district attorney's office. If they don't work with the district attorney's office, things break down and we don't function. At this point, if you're a police department, how can you trust the district attorney's office? How can you trust George Gascon? How can you go in there and expect him to act in good faith? And the answer is, for many police officers and for many police departments, my guess is they don't trust him. They have no faith in him. And their agency working with the district attorney's office is now probably, they have a very different relationship than they did with Steve Cooley and Jackie Lacey and others. How can the people of Los Angeles County feel safe if there is this breakdown in communication because of one man?
Well, there is a breakdown. There's no question there's a breakdown. I know what some jurisdictions are doing. They're filing federal charges. They're going to federal court to get prosecution versus the county. There's other options available. They don't do that a lot, but they do that on occasion when they want to see a filing take place. So they'll use a federal violation if they can find one and charge them federally. So that's one of the avenues. But the general public needs to understand that public safety is really shrinking. It's shrinking with the defund the police. It's shrinking with fewer units. It's shrinking overall, whether it's a small department or a large department, and you find that the people are the ones ultimately suffering. Why do you think, and this is a little controversial, but why do you think the sheriff of Los Angeles County is issuing CCWs? Years past, you have not seen CCWs, carrying concealed weapon. You have not seen that. But the county of Los Angeles, the sheriff of Los Angeles County, is currently issuing CCWs. This happens in other jurisdictions and other counties, but Los Angeles Police Department won't issue them. But this sheriff has decided, because of public safety and the fact that we don't have all we need for the resources to protect public, you can then apply for a concealed weapon, which means that you can carry a weapon. Hopefully you're trained, you get the background check, et cetera. You can carry that as you're walking around, as you're going shopping, as you're out to a restaurant. That self-confidence now is something that the sheriff has brought into play to protect people, because we don't have the resources to do that. When I heard the sheriff doing that, I said, in Los Angeles County? I mean, this happened years and years ago when they would do those CCWs. They stopped that. LAPD stopped it years ago. Very, very, very few. Now, as long as you've got a clean record, and I know people who've applied, they now have a CCW. They're not out there playing John Wayne. They're not out there doing anything illegal. They just want to protect themselves because they don't feel that law enforcement has the resources to protect them and their families. That's an example of what the sheriff of L.A. County has done. I know there's a bunch of gun advocates, pro and con. The fact is, why did the sheriff do that? Because he believes you have a right to be protected, you and your family. And if that's what it's going to take to protect you and your family, he's issuing those. And there's some controversy, but the fact is, that's done because we don't have the resources to assure protection for people. I mean, if it takes 15 minutes for a unit to get to a code 3 call about a robbery, home invasion, I mean, at what point do you say, who's going to protect me and my family? You can imagine, this is nighttime. You're there with your family. You call 911. Okay, we're on our way. Well, what's the ETA? 15 minutes? My God, we could be dead and buried in 15 minutes. That's the issue. So people need to wake up. We're not trying to frighten people. We're just trying to say, wake up, people. There's things that are changing. And I've been in law enforcement for 53 years. I've seen it crumble. Look, we got the 84 Olympics. It was a great time. We got the Olympics coming in 2028. Where are we going to have for resources to handle that? We're going to bring in the Army, the National Guard. We handled it with the resources that we had available. Things have changed. Times have changed. People need to wake up. They need to be aware of the consequences. Forget this epidemic. Just think about the quality of life and the safety for you and your family. Wake up and understand it's not liberal, it's not conservative, it's about people, plain and simple, people.
You say you could be dead and buried in 15 minutes with a home invasion robbery. If PG&E was your utility, you could be cremated by then.
That's true. That's true. So we don't want to fight. We just want to, you know, educate people. They don't see it. They really need to understand how significant it is and how the district attorney has really taken public safety and turned it upside down, and how he got his funding, what the motivation is. It's not for the will of the people, not the goodwill of the people. There's a sinister action. And if we don't hold people accountable for their actions, then we just have a lawless society. And I feel sorry for shopkeepers who are getting constant theft. The local Costco, I spoke to the general manager. People who go into Costco and steal at will. It's amazing that people are doing this. Hey, there's no consequences. Unless it's $9.50, it's no big deal. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It used to be, if you stole something, you got arrested, any subsequent offense would be a felony. We held people responsible. Now it's like, okay, what about that storekeeper who has to pay for everything, has to have bills, and has to follow the rules? Well, right now it's like, hey, it's okay. Because the system is not there to protect the business owner. The system is not there to protect the person who's paying taxes. We need a better way. Just basically follow the laws and have those laws enforced fairly by law enforcement, have them prosecuted fairly by the city attorney and the district attorney. And that is failing in the district attorney's office. Totally, miserably failing, period.
Former Los Angeles City Councilman Dennis Zine, thanks so much for stopping by on this Monday.
Pleasure. Thank you, John.
For an update on the recall attempt of Los Angeles City Councilman and homeless advocate Mike Bonin, here's Randy Wang.
The recall attempt for Mike Bonin, the second recall attempt for Mike Bonin, has gotten violent. See, Mike Bonin has a new anti-recall committee. It might sound familiar to you. They've got the Twitter handle, Stop the Right Wing Recalls. And they decided that it would be prudent for them to post a document that had one of the main proponents of Mike Bonin's recall, Katrina Schmidt, put out her name and her address. Well, just a few days after that went all over the internet, Katrina Schmidt, sitting in her condominium, heard a noise that was a brick going through her glass door.
Good God. That's totally normal.
That's the pro-Bonin people right there.
You know, you hear stories about Tammany Hall and what that was like in New York City back in the day, where you got on the wrong side of the political machine, or you got on the wrong side of the unions, and there was a horse's head that was put in your bed, and they sent a message. Now it's just the old brick through the window.
Meanwhile, on the other side of town, the recall effort of Nithya Raman has fizzled out because proponents could not find 12,000 people who knew who Nithya Raman was.
I don't know anything about the woman other than the fact that she's named after a delicious dish. Do you remember my cousin Tony, who made headlines not that long ago, Randy, when he was on an airplane coming from Florida to California, and there was a man on the plane who ended up having COVID and dying, but cousin Tony had to provide CPR to try to save the man's life?
Oh, that's right.
Well, as if that bad news wasn't enough, he was just informed that he's going to be honored as the hometown hero at a Chargers game on Halloween.
Well, at least nobody will be there, so he won't be able to get COVID.
So congratulations to cousin Tony for that. All right. One of the things that we've seen pop up all over the San Fernando Valley are these streets that no longer have enforceable parking restrictions because the streets are filled with RVs with homeless people living in them. And if you enforce the parking restrictions, you would have to kick the homeless people out.
I drive past one of these every single day. When I'm trying to get to the 405 freeway at Van Owen and Haskell, is an entire block of nothing but RVs. And every once in a while, if the traffic's slow, I try to peek over to see what's on the other side of those RVs. One of them had multiple cat trees set up on the street.
That seems like it would look attractive. Every person in the San Fernando Valley that lives on one of these streets looks like they have a cousin Eddie who's staying over from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
It has turned that street. One side is apartments. The other side looks like a junkyard.
And not only are they an eyesore, but they bring along crime and other undesirable elements as well. And in the Bay Area, apparently, one of these communities that has RVs parked all over the place is now riddled with crime.
What makes this even worse is this wasn't like the homeless just decided, okay, we're going to take over this street. No, this is a city-sanctioned RV homeless camp.
For more, here's KPIX-TV.
First at 5 is help for the homeless backfiring on some Oakland businesses. It all began with the idea for a safe RV parking lot. KPIX-5's Don Lynn is live at a car wash next to the RV encampment in High Street in Howard. Don, what's going on there?
The only safe RV parking lot is Camping World.
But they aren't homeless. They're just there temporarily.
Les, the car wash business owner, tells me some homeless people chased after his workers with a knife, and more recently, someone drove a truck through his business here. He is saying it's becoming much more dangerous to do business here.
I don't feel safe here anymore, and I need the city to do something about it.
The owner of the High Street Car Wash and Oil Change shows us surveillance video of an attempted break-in. Kevin Kim says 3 weeks ago, two men used a stolen truck with a lumber rack to ram his building to try to steal this ATM machine in the lobby.
Terrible. I'm heartbroken. You know, that cost me $20,000 in damage. And for a business that's already barely making it, to shell out another $20,000 is ridiculous. That same truck was found 2 days later. I found that truck in the RV encampment.
He says...
I guess when you're at the level of homelessness that you're in a city-sanctioned RV encampment, you don't worry about getting rid of the evidence of the truck you used to ram through a car wash to steal an ATM machine.
And I guess if you realize that you're not going to be arrested, then having a truck with a smashed-in front end sitting right beside the area that you smashed in isn't something that would occur to you that would be damning evidence.
I really wish that some of these homeless people be more forward thinking. The used car market's really hot right now. They probably could have sold that truck for a mint.
Even with the dented front end.
That's on top of the weekly harassment of his customers and workers by the homeless.
Twice I had people during the daytime, they're here, they're graffitiing on my building. My employees asked them, hey, can you please not do that? And then they pull out a switchblade on them, you know, and then they start chasing them around with the switchblade. And
I would say it is not advisable anywhere in California to stop somebody from graffitiing because you will get stabbed.
Oh, I remember in Hesperia, California, there was a woman who caught these gang members graffitiing up a building and she flashed her lights from her car at them and they murdered her.
Chasing them around with the switchblade, and then my employees, one of them quit because they can't handle it anymore.
He blames mismanagement of the city-run RV encampment next door for many of the crime-related problems. As a result, he says business has dropped by 35% since the city set up the encampment a few years ago.
I've probably lost close to $1 million in the last 3 to 4 years.
He's not alone. Nearby businesses have complained of the same problems. The nearby Home Depot threatened to shut down.
Businesses here, you got to come together and file a lawsuit against the city.
Councilman Noel Gallo represents this area. He says he too can't get the city departments to enforce existing policies.
It's frustrating for me as it is for all the other residents here.
A neighbor gave me the police log she obtained from the police department, which shows at this RV encampment, there were 21 calls for police service in the first 7 months this year. Outside of the city-run encampment, there's an illegal encampment next to Home Depot. Dozens of RVs are also parked along Alameda Avenue. In the first 7 months this year, more than 500 calls for police service in this neighborhood.
500 calls just from the RVs.
Wait a minute. Okay, we've got 500 calls just for this one area. How many did OJ have? I'm talking about when he was married and separated from Nicole, not in Las Vegas, just in Brentwood.
It's not 500.
More?
It's possible.
If this continues in another year or two, I'll be out of business.
Dahl, what is the city saying about the business owners' complaints?
We reached out to the city this morning about solutions. So far, no response from the city's homelessness administrator. By the way, Kevin says he's sympathetic to the homeless, and he knows there are a lot of good people living next door in the encampment.
You don't need to say that, Mr. Car Wash Guy.
No. If they keep pulling switchblades on your employee, you can say you want every single one of them to go to hell.
These are not people that just, they had a bad couple of months. And they had to go take their RV to the encampment while they're in between jobs. That's not what's going on here. And you're hearing a lot about these city-sanctioned RV parks in places like Oakland and San Jose and the rest of the Bay Area. City Councilman Mike Bonin wants to bring those here. His main argument is you can't tell the homeless where not to go unless you tell them where to go. And that's why he wants to use public parks and parking lots for things like this in your neighborhood.
What starts up there doesn't end there. It eventually comes here. Because you look at the policies that are being implemented in the city of Los Angeles and other independent municipalities, so much of what they do is just copycat legislation from what began in Oakland, what began in San Francisco. That's the world we live in. Right now, I want to spend some time on PG&E. Because PG&E is really one of the worst actors in the state of California. They've been held criminally liable for burning two towns down to the ground and burning people alive because they will not maintain their faulty equipment that they know is faulty. But because they have Gavin Newsom and the Public Utilities Commission in their back pocket, they can do whatever they want. Well, one of the things that they're doing now, because they don't like the fact that people are complaining that they keep burning people alive, is that whenever they want to, they just turn the power off, including during light rain. For more, here's KPIX.
PG&E rushing to restore power to thousands of customers after widespread outages impacted over 28,000 people last night.
In the past hour, PG&E said that over 7,800 Bay Area customers still do not have power. The majority are in the East Bay, where more than 6,800 customers are in the dark. On the peninsula, nearly 500 do not have power. In San Francisco, over 240 are out. And in the North Bay, 84 don't have power. Now, PG&E expects to restore power by midnight, but some customers in Richmond, El Cerrito, and San Pablo may be in the dark until tomorrow.
And as KPX5's John Ramos reports, it happened because of how little rain we got rather than how much.
The small amount of rain we got did nothing to help the drought, but it sure wreaked havoc on the East Bay power grid.
For some drizzle? Yeah, turning the power off, you got a light sprinkle?
I thought the worst thing about drizzle is it just makes everyone drive like a jerk.
Esther Dominguez has been without power in her Richmond home since 1 o'clock this morning, and she's not buying it's because of the rain.
It was just a sprinkly.
Yeah.
So I don't think that is the reason why the power went off. It has to be something else.
She's not buying it.
But PG&E says if it had rained harder, there wouldn't have been so much trouble. That's because so much dust and dirt has built up on the power lines with no way to wash it off.
And when the first mist or rain comes along after a long dry spell, it turns this mixture into mud, and mud conducts electricity. And so this could damage electrical equipment and cause outages.
Only if you knew that ahead of time and did something like harden your lines or put them underground or any kind of 20th century maintenance to prevent mud from sparking up fires on your crappy equipment.
Well, think about the argument they're making. If it had rained hard, we would have left the power on. But because it only rained a little bit, we shut it off for an entire region of people.
40% of the state, this is how they get their power, and these are the geniuses in charge.
It's called a flashover, and it damaged transformers and insulated equipment all throughout the East Bay, centered in the Richmond, San Pablo, El Cerrito area. At 8 this morning, nearly 29,000 customers were without power.
More than 5 hours when it's off, so we had to wait like a long time to get power. So I guess all the neighborhoods, they're not happy with this.
Streetlights were dead, and the Richmond Target store was operating under minimum backup power. And at the Wells Fargo Bank, the ATM machines were dark. But look closely in the neighborhoods, and you can see many transformers looking a bit singed.
I seen PG&E spraying the transformers a couple of days ago with some water substance or something, checking to see if they was off. And ever since then, the power been off everywhere. It's been McDonald's all the way up and down. So there's a lot going on in these streets with the power. I don't know.
Does it feel like this is happening a lot more often than it used to?
Yeah, in this area does happen. Yeah, we got this problem around almost every week. The lights come off. And
last weekend, it went out 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and it didn't come back on until Saturday 9:15.
You think PG&E reimburses anybody when they shut their power off every week?
I have lived in this state my entire life. At no point until very recently would they shut the power off arbitrarily all the time.
You know, there might be a light dusting of rain, and we have to make sure that the power's off because our equipment can't handle a couple of droplets of water.
I've lived through the light rain. I've lived through the heavy rain. All the time I was able to watch television.
At night.
PG&E crews have been working all day, and by 2 p.m., power had been restored to more than two-thirds of affected customers. But Esther was still in the dark, doing the only thing she could.
Cross my fingers that mine will come on right away.
In Richmond, John Ramos, KPIX 5.
Now, John, that was a report from this morning, and then a few hours later they had to update it because PG&E now has to shut the power off again because it's a little windy today.
I'm telling you, You just wait. Southern California Edison and the DWP are going to do this exact same thing to us. It's just going to be a way of life here in California. They shut it off whenever they want to. You're going to blame us when we burn you alive. Well, guess what? You're going to have to live without power all the time, anytime we have an excuse to shut it off. This is not how you're supposed to live in a first world country. We've got one more hour coming up on the John Phillips Show. Don't go anywhere. Talk Radio 790 KABC.